वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is Canto 5, Chapter 24, and it will be text 23 since it's all in prose. I will skip the Sanskrit and go directly to the translation. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead could see no other means of taking everything away from Bali Maharaj, he adopted the trick of begging from him and took away all the three worlds. Thus only his body was left, but the Lord was still not satisfied. He arrested Bali Maharaj, bound him with the ropes of Varuna, and threw him in a cave in a mountain. Nevertheless, although all his property was taken and he was thrown into a cave, Bali Maharaj was such a great devotee that he spoke as follows. So this, just what I read, had an incredibly great effect upon Bali Maharaj, as we will see in the course of this talk. And we will also see how everything we are doing in terms of spiritual practices, devotional readings, kirtans, such as the one we just have, which was rip-roaring, to say the least. It reminded me, I thought I was back in 1976. Really? That's the way we used to have them every day. So these are what bring spiritual merit to all of us and to all of our ancestors who have passed on, and to all the descendants we will have from our family. So it goes beyond just what we do for ourselves. It's very extensive. Translation, text number 24. Alas, Bali Maharaj says, how pitiable it is for Indra, the king of heaven, that although he is a very learned and powerful, and although he chose Brihaspati as his prime minister to instruct him, he is completely ignorant concerning spiritual advancement. Brihaspati is also unintelligent because he did not properly instruct his disciple Indra. Lord Vamanadeva was standing at Indra's door, but King Indra, instead of begging him for an opportunity to render transcendental loving service, engaged him in asking me for alms to gain the three worlds for his sense gratification. Sovereignty over the three worlds is very insignificant, because whatever material opulence one may possess lasts only for an age of Manu, which is but a tiny fraction of endless time. Purport. Excuse me. Bali Maharaj was so powerful that he fought with Indra and took possession of the three worlds. Indra was certainly very advanced in knowledge, but instead of asking Vamanadeva for engagement in his service, he used the Lord to beg for material possessions that would be finished at the end of one age of Manu. An age of Manu, which is the duration of Manu's life, is calculated to last 72 yugas. One yuga consists of 4,300,000 years, and therefore the duration of Manu's life is 309,600,000 years, because this is in the higher planetary systems. Nobody down here should expect ever to reach that. Although there was one yogi, I forgot his name. It's in the end of the Bhagavatam, 12th canto. Anybody remember? He actually went through the whole kalpa. Huh? I can't hear. Yes. The demigods possess their material opulence only until the end of the life of Manu. Time is insurmountable. The time one is allotted, even if it be millions of years, is quickly gone. The demigods own their material possessions only within the limits of time. Therefore, Bali Maharaj lamented that although Indra was very learned, he did not know how to use his intelligence properly. For instead of asking Vamanadeva to allow him to engage in his service, Indra used him to beg Bali Maharaj for material wealth. Although Indra was learned, and his prime minister, Brihaspati, was also learned, neither of them begged to be able to render loving service to Lord Vamanadeva. Therefore, Bali Maharaj lamented for Indra. Omagina timirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmalitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances at his lotus feet. I pray and beg all the devotees to please give me their prayers and blessings to be able to say something that will be useful and beneficial for everyone here, as well as anyone and everyone listening on the internet, so that we can all move closer and faster to the lotus feet of our Supreme Lord Krishna and his divine consort Radharani. Thank you. As we know, Bali Maharaj was he was the leader of the Asuras, or the demons. I believe he comes in the family of Diti. And Aditi is the mother of the demigods. But quite anomalously, although Bali Maharaj was born in the family of the demons, he was anything but a demon. He had tremendous devotion, actually, to the Supreme Lord. And as I mentioned a little bit earlier, this was the result of his grandfather's loving devotional service to the Supreme Lord, in particular, Lord Nrisingadeva. He had such great devotion, such great love, that when his father, Hiranyakashipu, tried so many times to kill him because Prahlad Maharaj was in favor of, always glorifying the Supreme Lord Vishnu, who Hiranyakashipu considered his enemy. So just think about it. Here's this great, my great in the form of power. He had infinite power, material power. And his own son is praising his enemy. Anyway, he tried so many times to kill his son, but he could never succeed. He had his attendants try to stab him with tridents. Nothing happened. The tridents went to the skin, but they couldn't puncture. He had his attendants throw Prahlad Maharaj, he was only 5 years old, throw him off a mountain. But the earth just pretty much opened up her arms and just caught him. And he felt no pain when he hit. His father tried to drown him. Never drowned. Father had him trampled by elephants. Didn't have any effect on his body. The interesting thing about all this is that Prahlad couldn't care less about what happened to him. He considered that his body was God's property. My Lord, this is your property to do what you want to do with it. So if you want to embrace me, fine. If you want to push me away, fine. If you want to have these elephants trample me, fine. You want to kill me, fine. You want to give me five heads, fine. Whatever you want to do to me is fine with me, because whatever you do is good. Because you are God. And you know what is best. You know what is great. You know what is wonderful. And I know nothing. So why should I pray to be saved when you yourself know what is best for me? So this kind of prayer touches the heart so deeply of the Lord. Prahlad was ready to die at any time. And Hiranyakasipu poisoned him. He subjected him to winds. He put ghastly winds, to heat, to cold. Every conceivable torture you can imagine, he subjected his little five-year-old son to, which he should not have done because he was only five. And not only that, but the punishments just for being against his father was certainly unjustifiable. Finally, Lord Nrsingadev, which was half man, half lion, when he saw that Hiranyakasipu was going to attempt to kill, personally, he was going to attempt to kill his little devotee, and Hiranyakasipu said, "Let me see your God. Is your God in this pillar?" And Prahlad says, "He's not only is in the pillar, but he's in you and he's everywhere." He says, "Yes, let me see your God appear and protect you." So he took his fist and brum, he rammed it right into the column. And the column, you know, shook, and out of this column came this roaring, loud, thunderous sound of Lord Nrsingadev appearing, you know, like that. And so he came and he stepped down, and then there was an incredible fight which took place, which the Lord was relishing no end. In fact, that was one of his reasons, not all of his reasons, but one of the reasons that he appeared in this world is that he needed a good sparring partner. That's mentioned that he arranged for the fall of Jai and Vijay, his doorkeepers in Vaikuntha, so that he could have some good fighting. Because actually, you don't really, even if your devotees agree to fight with you, they're not going to be much of a fight because they love you too much. But if you've got your devotee filled with the mode of passion and ignorance, well, then they hate you. And that's what he wanted, a really good, rip-roaring fight. And that's what he got. So Hiranyakasipu was actually performing it was a pastime. He was actually a great devotee who forgot that he was a great devotee, and he was participating in a pastime which would enable the Lord to get a certain amount of pleasure and fun and thrill through the process of wrestling and fighting and all of this which goes on, which men particularly like and women don't like. So where do we get that from? We get it from Krishna. And women get their different qualities, you know, of shyness and bashfulness and sweetness, and that from Srimati Radharani. So these qualities come from the Lord and his consort. It's not that we invent them or we create them, but they're in us. Of course, it doesn't mean that because God fights that we should go around picking fights with everyone coming down the street and saying, "Well, God does it, I can do it." Well, you're not God. And not only that, but he knew when to fight, and he arranged this perfectly. So, anyway, I want to bring this to today's talk. Anyway, the important point is that Lord Nrsingadev asked for Lord Maharaj. He says, "I want you to ask for a blessing." He says, "I really don't have anything to ask." He says, "Yes, ask for something." He says, "All right, please help me never become attached to this material world. And let me always be your devotee." So he says, "Do you have anything else to ask?" He says, "Well, one more thing." He says, "What is that?" He says, "Well, my father was really a demon. He offended me, he offended you, he offended so many devotees. Could you please liberate him, save him from all the sinful reactions that he's going to get as a result?" So the Lord said, "Not only will I save him from all his sinful reactions, but all your family members going all the way back, and all your family members which will come forward. In other words, your descendants and your ancestors, every one of them will be born with devotional qualities. And those qualities will manifest for their benefit. They will all become great devotees at some point in time. So Prahlad Maharaj was very happy at this because that's what he wanted. He wanted all these demons in the family in which he was born. He wanted them to see them transformed. And Srila Prabhupada, by his inconceivable mercy, came here with that very same purpose. All around him, there was just all kinds of demons in the modes of passion and ignorance. And he prayed to Lord Krishna when he was on the boat, the Jaladuta. He says, I don't know how I'm going to help these people to understand this incredible Vedic philosophy. He says, but you're the master of all mystics. Somehow you can enable them to understand it. And I'm praying to you, please help me to speak to them in a way that they will understand and by which they will become transformed. And in that transformation, may they all become devotees instead of being the demons that they presently are. They don't even know right from wrong. They're engaged in illicit sexual connections. They're engaged in drinking and drug taking. They're engaged in all kinds of gambling. They think this is okay because after all, gambling, the state supports it. They encourage it. They put the winning numbers on TV so that you can see whether you won or you lost your shirt. Anyway, so, which one did I miss? The intoxication? And meat eating of meat, fish, and eggs. So Srila Prabhupada said they are all, and they don't even know that there's anything wrong in it. They don't know the Vedic scriptures. So by Krishna's grace, Srila Prabhupada was empowered to touch and move and steer and stimulate the hearts of everyone he spoke with. And many, many came and joined. Thousands joined this movement because it made so much sense. And it was so valuable. And they felt, just by the chanting of this Hare Krishna mantra, the inner transformation that takes place. And in feeling that transformation, they felt compelled, urged, pushed to share it with others who were less fortunate. And others took it up. They heard it. They became inclined towards listening to it, towards chanting it. And when they chanted it, they too began to feel the inner bliss and happiness and fulfillment that comes from regular chanting. So Srila Prabhupada is, as Srila Prabhupada put it in his own words, he says, I am your good karma. Very interesting, very nice. That, you know, one devotee had asked something about his good karma and bad karma, and Prabhupada says, I am your good karma. What I have taught you will bring you all blessedness, all goodness, all sweetness. It will bring you the Supreme Lord. And when you have that, you have everything. So now we come to Bali Maharaj, and I just mentioned before, and it was important to give that little preamble, that Bali Maharaj is the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj, that little 5-year-old boy who then grew up. And he is the grandson, and he was very powerful, so powerful that he and his demoniac followers, they were able to defeat Indra and his followers, all the gods. And what happened was that they threw Indra out of his own Indraloka. His capital is Amaravati. So Indra had to really beat it, otherwise it would have been death. He would have been destroyed. So Indra left, Chandra left, Vayu left, all of the gods, they all left. Not only did they leave and went to unknown planets, but they even remained in disguise for fear that they might lose their life by one of these spies of Bali Maharaj. So it just happened to be that Indra's mother, Aditi, like any mother, she was bereft of all of her sons. And every mother likes her children around her. You know, like the mother hen has her little chickens. So Aditi was no different. She wanted her sons around. She wanted to hear of their glories, wanted to hear of their great things they were doing, the celebrations they were having and so forth. Anyway, Bali had occupied the seat of Indra. And so she was alone and she wanted her sons back. All the demigods were her sons. So she asked her husband, Kashyapa Muni, and she said, you know, I'm really very lonely for my sons and I don't like this. She says, I wanted my sons back. He says, how can I, she says, how can I get them back? He says, well, that's not so easy. She says, well, what can I do? I'll do anything to get them back. He says, well, the only one who can get them back for you is the Supreme Lord. She says, all right, what can I do to bring the Supreme Lord into my presence so that I can ask him to get them back? He says, well, there is some ceremony or some vows. It's called the Payavrata vows. And it's there are a number of number of austerities that she would have to perform, such as she would have to sleep on the floor for 2 weeks, she'd have to chant a certain amount of rounds, she would have to read certain scriptures, she would have to bathe 3 times a day, she would have to observe celibacy, a lot of austerity. He said, if you can go through all this perfectly, then you can call upon the Lord and he will appear before you. So she was very determined, and she succeeded. And so she did call upon the Lord, and the Lord appeared in his forearm form. And she says, yes, my dear goddess, what can I do for you? She told him her problem. She says, can you help me? Can you get him back from it? Get my sons back? He says, well, I'll have to appear in a different form for that. She says, whatever you have to do, would you please do it? So he disappeared, and then she became pregnant. Kashyapa Muni was her husband, and she gave birth to this dwarf-like child. By the way, I believe this takes place on the heavenly planets. I don't think this takes place on Earth, near the heavenly Narmada River. If anyone knows otherwise, please correct me, but if my reading, my memory serves me correctly. Anyway, he appeared like a dwarf brahmachari. He was dressed just like a brahmachari with deer skin, and he had the belt, and he had the staff and the yellow and so forth. And so when he was born or appeared, all the demigods came and they showered him with gifts. Some gave him an umbrella, some gave him a stick, some gave him beads and so forth. Anyway, he then left his mother's company, and he was to go on the mission, which is being talked about here in the text, to satisfy Indra's desire to get back his kingdom. The kingdom meant the whole world, the whole universe. Not just a country, not just the globe, but all of the upper planets, middle planets, and lower planets. That's what he wanted back. And that's what Bali Maharaj here is speaking of as being so stupid. He said, your brother was the Supreme Lord, and that's all you could ask of him? To get you back some planets and have some power so that you can drink all these spirits and get drunk and have lots of fun and lots of girlfriends? That's all you could think of? So here we have Bali Maharaj's, of course, his spiritual qualities coming slowly but surely to the fore. Now we have to remember that when Bali Maharaj was conquering the whole world, even though he had many devotional qualities, because as I said, he virtually, and I put quotes on the word, inherited them from the desire of his grandfather, Prahlad Maharaj. But they were more latent than prominent. So it was the Lord's desire to bring out, to make shine those beautiful devotional qualities. And therefore he had a wonderful plan. So he went to a sacrificial ground where Bali Maharaj was conducting a sacrifice with all of the Brahmin priests. Bhrigu was there and so many other Brahmins. And he came in, and when he approached, he was glowing. Effulgence was coming out of him. And they knew that this was an illustrious, a great, marvelous personality who was just come in. Who is he? Nobody knew who he was. He just looked like a young man, young boy. And he was there. So immediately, as soon as Bali Maharaj saw him, although he didn't know who he was, he immediately stopped everything. And what he did is he said, please, would you please sit down here? I can see that you are an illustrious, you are a prominent, you are a great devotee of some sort, a great master. Allow me to serve you. Which is, again, what he is saying right here in the verse. That was the first thing that came to his mind. I must serve this person, even though he doesn't know who he is. So he sat him down, he got some water, he washed his feet, he took the water, poured it over his head, And he was becoming purified just by the water that was flowing down his face and his eyes. He was becoming tearful and ecstatic at the same time. He says, "My dear Lord, whoever you are, whatever you are, tell me, how else can I serve you?" So Vamanadev said, "Well, I don't really want anything." He says, "Well, I must give you something. It would be offensive for me to let you leave here without me giving you something, since I own the whole universe." You know, with quotes, actually, he knows that God owns the universe, but he's the empowered trustee of the universe. So he says, I can give you anything. Would you like a village? I can give it to you. Would you like some jewels? You want rubies? You want diamonds? You want emeralds, sapphires? I'll give you all you want. You want cows? I'll give you millions. Whatever you want, I will give you. Just say it. What would you like? So Vamanadeva says, "Well, I'll take 3 steps of land." In other words, the amount of land that 3 of your steps could cover, that's it. I'll take that. He says, "What? That's all you want?" He said, "Yes, that's enough. I'll be satisfied." He says, but he thought he was a little bit dumb. He says, too young to know what was really valuable. He says, but I can give you things that will last you so long. I can give you so much. That's all you want is just enough land that you can cover 3 steps. Yes, that's enough. Nothing more. So he says, "All right, if that's what you want, it's yours." He says, "All right, I'll take my 3 steps now." So he took the first step and he covered the whole earthly planet, middle planetary system. Second step, he covered the upper planetary system. And his toenails crashed through the material covering. Covering meaning that beyond that is the Virjar River, and beyond the Virjar River is the eternal or spiritual world. So he poked a hole in the covering and the water came down. And that water, because it was the water in which the Lord lies in, bathes in, it came down and it flowed into the heavenly planets, down to the middle planets, and then down to the lower planets, which we now know in the heavenly planets, it's the Mandakini Ganges, and in the earthly planets, it's the Ganges River that we know of in India. So that's why it is said that it is a very purifying, holy river, because it has been touched by God Himself, and therefore it can purify the heart, the mind, the intelligence, just by touching it. And those who have faith in that, they make very great advancement in that. It is a pure, pure river. So anyway, that was one benefit that came. The next is that he still had one more step to take. So he came back and he said, "Well, where else can I take my step?" I should mention that Vamanadeva had made his body immensely, infinitesimally large. So then when he came, he reduced it back to its normal size. And then he said to Bali Maharaj, he says, "Well, where can I take my 3rd step? You promised me 3 steps. You made a promise." So he didn't know what to do because he didn't know where else. Where else? There was no place in the universe. He says, "Well, if you'll please just, I'll take your last step, put it on my head. I will be greatly pleased and hopefully I will fulfill my promise." So he stepped on his head. I should mention that just prior to Lord Vamanadeva taking his 3 steps, there was Shukracharya, the priest of the demons, and he was there. And he was telling Bali Maharaj, he was saying, no, don't give him anything. He said, "Well, I made a promise." "No, forget it. Don't keep your promise." He says, "But he's a Brahmin. How can I not keep my promise?" He says, "Well, you didn't say the word Om before you made the promise, so there's no promise." He says, "No, but my intention was to give him that." He says, "Well, you know, to save your life, you can tell a lie." He says, "How can I do that when I definitely intended to give him this? Therefore, how can I say that I intentionally lied when I didn't lie? I was downright serious about giving him the 3 steps of land." So he argued with his guru. And his guru got very angry. He says, "You're going to lose everything, all your power, everything in the world." So Bali Maharaj, he actually didn't care. some his spiritual qualities had risen to the surface. Anyway, what happened was that Bali Maharaj, he then could not give him any more land. So the Lord called Garuda, and Garuda tied him up with the ropes of Varuna. And Bali was tied up. Lord Brahma came down after Bali was tied up for a while. And he came down and he says, okay, Bali has suffered enough. You should let him go. He was put in a cave and he was tied up. So then he said, well, you can let him go. He's already suffered enough. And the main point of all of this was that Bali Maharaj, prior to the Lord coming, was a bit puffed up. He was rather arrogant. He felt he was the Lord of all he surveyed. And in one sense, he was the Lord of all he surveyed. And this was bad because it was not allowing his devotional qualities to come to the surface, to come to the fore. And so when the Lord stepped on his head, and when the Lord put him in his place, took all of his property, the upper planetary system, lower planetary system, middle system, he took it all away from Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj was now poverty stricken. He had nothing. And Prahlad Maharaj came and appeared there, and he says, just see, you were so powerful, you had everything, you were so great, now you've got nothing. Glorify the Lord. You should be the happiest person in the world. He says, yes, now I realize I'm not what I thought I was. I'm nothing. I'm insignificant. I'm worthless. Here is the great man, the great person. Here is the glorious person. Here's the person I should be thinking of all the time. I forgot. I start to think that I'm the owner when actually I was really his caretaker. But I forgot I was the caretaker and began to think I was the owner. But he put me in my place. He humbled me. He created some modesty in me. And now I'm very thankful for what he has done. So what happened was that the Lord was very pleased with the remarks of Bali Maharaj. He says, I'm very pleased with what you're saying. He said, and I knew this was going to happen. And I therefore had Vishvakarma, the architect of the demigods, create a nice little planet for you called Sutala. That's what all this is about. We're discussing the different lower planetary systems such as Atala and Vatala and Patala and Sutala. So Sutala is ruled by Bali Maharaj. So that's your place. And it is more opulent, more beautiful, more incredibly delightful than even the place that Indra has, Amaravati. It's called the lower heavenly planet, so to speak. So Bali said, all this you're doing for me? Not only that, but if any one of your men, your demons, challenge you, I will kill them personally, he said. You're doing that for me? He says, yes. And moreover, I will be your doorkeeper. And anytime you want my company, it's there. All you have to do is open your door, and I'm there. So, Bali Maharaj, due to his devotion, his love, his surrender, his submission, and his desire to want to please Krishna and serve Krishna, got the greatest of benediction. He didn't ask for anything. He didn't ask, oh Lord, please get me back all the property that you've just taken away from me and given to Indra. Please give me the power to be able to defeat him again. He didn't ask for that. He was fully satisfied with that which he had. And that's the mark of a great devotee. He's satisfied. He's content. Satisfied in the sense that whatever he's receiving, he knows is coming from Krishna. And he knows it's coming from him. And he's always appreciative. He's thankful. You know, he's grateful. And he prays to the Lord that he will not forget the Lord. As it is said, when the two most important principles of the Shastras is never forget the Lord, never forget Krishna, always remember Krishna. And these two principles are the basis on which all the scriptures are focused and come to. If one can come to just that principle, never forgetting Krishna, never always remembering Krishna, then he knows the essence of all the scriptures. Not just know it, but actually practice that. So in this story, we have a very, very wonderful example in the form of Bali Maharaj. And see, I've gone over time as usual. I'm sorry. My apologies. I place my head at your feet. Please, you can kick me if you like. Do whatever you like. I shouldn't have done that. Does anyone have a question? A quick one that I can answer? Yes, Prabhu. Someone coming for the mic is coming. Yeah.
You were mentioning that Prahlad Maharaj received blessing from Nrsingadev to have all his descendants as devotees.
Yeah.
And yet his own son, Virochan, became very materialistic. So,
Well, I don't understand. Is it a question?
Yeah. How that happened?
How does what happen? How does Prahlad become a great devotee?
No. How his son became materialistic, even though he got benediction that all his descendants will be devotees.
How Bali Maharaj became materialistic?
No. Virochan.
Virochan.
Son of Prahlad
How
Maharaj.
He became materialistic?
Yeah.
He's associating, he's in contact with demons. I don't know the whole story of Virochan, you see, and I can't really talk extensively on that. I haven't studied his whole life, except to say that if devotional qualities did not manifest at that time, then they will manifest at a later time. There's a time schedule for everyone's karma. Just like in this particular pastime, Bali Maharaj was rather materialistic himself. He just wanted to win the whole universe, and he did. But buried deep within him were devotional qualities. And it took just this situation to become a catalyst to allow this change or transformation to take place in him. First, his humility manifested. From that humility came submission. And from that submission, his appreciation and his great enjoyment over the fact that God had actually come and enabled him. So all those qualities were in a latent, or what we call a dormant form. As far as Virochana, I don't know if and when they ever manifested in that lifetime. But at some time, they must. Yes, maybe you can comment, Nakatmapur.
Just a point of clarification. The benediction was that 14 generations would be liberated. That was the benediction that Lord Nrsingadev had given to Prahlad's descendants. 14 generations would be liberated. So that meant sent 7 forward and 7 back, liberated. But, you know, whether they're devotees in that particular lifetime, that's, we don't have enough information about that. But they were given the benediction that they would be liberated 7 forward and 7 back.
And from that state, one can, of course, go further. And that was what the Prahlad Maharaj wanted, that they should not just, of course, they would get liberated, but when you're liberated, which means you're free of your karma, you're free of modes of nature, and you can then begin. It's like that wonderful verse. I can't remember it. It's the Brahma Bhuta verse. Anybody remember that? But anyway, and that's that after one achieves that state, one can then go on to devotional, pure devotional service. One who is transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. In that state, he attains pure devotional service. In that state, he attains pure devotional service to me. I left out some of it, but that's the basic idea. Yes. Did somebody else have a question? Okay, we'll call it now. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.